Syria's air defense systems. I don't think they have been successful, however, because clearly Syrian air defense systems are working well and better than they did at the start of the war. Most of Israel's missiles have been shot down.
The Israeli attacks against Syria have been going on ever since the country was gripped by foreign-backed militancy in March 2011. The Syrian government forces have already clawed back much of the territory it lost to terrorist groups in the first couple of years of the Syrian conflict. Syrian troops are now engaged in a few mopping-up operations to clear the country from the remnants of Takfiri terror groups. The Syrian government says the Israeli regime and its Western and regional allies are aiding Takfiris that reduced large swathes of Syria to rubble.
Well, the U.S. is continuing their four-decade, tradition of supporting terrorism in the region. They continue to fund the White Helmets, which, as we know, is Al-Qaeda with white hats on, in Idlib province. They continue to try to extend the conflict in the northwest of Syria, where Al-Qaeda has taken over the entirety of Idlib province. And they admit that Al-Qaeda is the biggest force in that region. And they want to maintain and continue that war for as long as possible by supporting Al-Qaeda.
Monday's attack on Syria comes as senior Israeli military officials have previously said that escalating attacks inside the Arab country are aimed at ending Iran's military presence there. This is while Iran says its military presence in Syria is upon a request from the Damascus government, adding that Tehran has not received any message demanding it leave Syria.
Of course, the Syrian government invited Iran to support Syria against the terrorist and Zionist attack. Syria and Iran have been allies for decades. And of course, this is also in Iran's interest, because those terrorists will eventually try to attack within Iran. And of course, the whole point of the war is why the US caused the war in the first place is for Israel's sake, and that is to try to create a new government in Syria that would not be allied to Iran. They're trying to break up the Syrian-Iranian alliance.
Damascus has sent many letters of protest to the UN to demand a world body end the Israeli aggression. So far, to no avail.
Well, Israel continuously is breaking international law by breaching Syrian sovereignty. And we also know that they have done this for decades in Palestine. And the United Nations hasn't been able to do anything about it. They are now trying to take Israel to the International Criminal Court. And this is something that's been resisted by the US and even Germany. So the problem with the United Nations is that at the end of the day, who controls what happens? It's the country that has the power, that has nuclear weapons. And therefore, the UN is a bit of a joke, because even if they were to condemn Israel for its crimes, which even that they're not able to do, they wouldn't be able to physically do anything to bring Israel to justice.
Many construe the West's silence towards continued Israeli attacks on Syria as tactical support for the aggression. They also attribute the escalation in the attacks to Israel's anger over the victory of Syria and the axis of resistance in the face of the years-long militancy against the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The militancy is widely seen as a foreign-backed plot to bring about regime change in Syria and partition it into weak states in favor of Israel's geostrategic interests. The militancy failed. Now Syria is nearly in full control of its territory and is on track towards stability.
Bahrainis have taken to the streets across the tiny Persian Gulf kingdom to mark the 10th anniversary of a popular uprising against the ruling monarchy. The rallies took place on Saturday night, on the eve of the 2011 uprising's anniversary, with the participants chanting slogans against the Al-Khalifa regime and King Hamad bin Isa Al-Khalifa. The protests were held in several towns and villages near the capital Manama. People called for an end to human rights violations and the release of political prisoners. The demonstrators carried pictures of the uprising's leaders and martyrs, as well as placards vowing resistance until victory.
They have waited for almost 100 years of struggle, 100 years of struggle since 1922 until now, and they put forward their demands. Clearly, they do not want this dictatorship. Now, of course, the situation has become even worse because the Khalifa dictators have become even more anti-people, against the people, with harsh policies. But also, they have gone as far as the Arab and Muslim cause of Palestine, and they have normalized their relationship with the Israelis. The people are simply very angry. They just do not like that. They think this is betrayal, this is treachery.
They also blocked the streets by setting up bonfires despite heavy security and the presence of policemen. The protesters held handwritten posters with messages of solidarity with the families of the martyrs and condemnation of the regime's repression. Additionally, the coalition youth of the 14th February Revolution, in a statement, called on all Bahraini groups and masses to close ranks in order to change the ruling political regime in Manama. The Manama regime is pressing ahead with its heavy-handed crackdown and persecution of human rights campaigners and political dissidents, despite condemnations by the international community. Furthermore, the Al-Khalifa regime has begun trying civilians at military tribunals since 2017, a move that has drawn widespread condemnation from human rights bodies and activists, and has been described as the imposition of an undeclared martial law across the country. The heavy-handed response saw scores of people dead, thousands arrested, and many tortured in custody over years. The unprecedented suppression drew international outcries. Emboldened by foreign support, the Manama regime dissolved the main opposition party Al-Wefaq in 2016 and put its leaders behind bars. Experts believe the ruling regime in Bahrain is committing such acts with impunity as it enjoys support from Saudi Arabia.
We also know that the Khalifis are receiving orders from the Saudis, from the Emiratis, and this is another problem. They have sold out the sovereignty of the country. We are not a sovereign state. We do not have our own political decisions. We have to follow them. The Emirates and the Saudis say, we want to go and have relations with Israel. Yes, we have to. It is not a matter of discussion and debate. It is a matter of imposition and a matter of following, accepting whatever is being imposed from the outside.
But as Bahrain's most prominent Shia cleric, Sheikh Isa Qasim, noted, the actions of the Al-Khalifa regime and the unwavering support of the Saudi military cannot undermine the determination of the Bahraini people, as a reactionary and cruel rule of the Bahraini regime is incompatible with the will of the people.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, what is justice? The extensive meaning of this word is to put everything in its place. In other words, it is being in balance and equilibrium. This meaning or sense of justice rules over all of the created universe. In the galaxies, within an atom, in the structure of a human being's existence, and all plants and animals. This is what the famous tradition of the Holy Prophet refers to when he says, "It is by means of justice that all of the heavens and the earth exist." For example, if the power of attraction and repulsion of the earth lose their sense of balance, and one of these two is removed or destroyed, the earth will be drawn towards the sun, set on fire, and destroyed, or it will leave its circuit and wander in the endless space of the universe until it is destroyed. This is how important justice is, not just at a personal level, not just at an individual level, not just at a level of a community or family. It goes beyond that. Justice is something that governs this universe. The galaxies, the planets, everything stands in need of justice. And hence, human society is based on this guiding principle of divine justice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the hereafter as well. When you look at the traditions, when you look at the verses of Quran, you see that justice is that prevailing and guiding principle for everyone out there. There's not going to be any favoritism. On the Day of Judgment, Allah is going to show His divine justice. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we're discussing the topic of justice. What is justice? Normally, when we talk about it, it seems as if we're talking about just the legal rights of a human being. We're saying that no, the realm of justice, the scope of justice, it is far beyond just an individual. The universe is running based on this guiding principle of justice. Another meaning of justice is the following of individual rights, and point opposite is oppression, in the sense taking the rights of some and giving them exclusively to others, or to take away someone's rights and give them to another, to discriminate in the sense that some people are given their rights and others are not. It is clear that the second meaning is a particular one, and the first one is general. It should be noted that both meanings are truthful in relation to God. The meaning of God's justice is not to remove the rights of a person, nor give the rights of one to another, or to discriminate between people. He is just in all senses of the word. This is what justice means when it comes to the rights of the people. So there are two main interpretations of what justice is. One is putting everything in its place, and the second is to give the right of someone who it belongs to and who deserves that right. So putting these two together, I think we can say very safely that these two are interconnected. Putting everything in its place is also referring to giving the rights of an individual that belongs to that individual and not usurping somebody's right, land, or property. So remember, this is how Islam looks at justice. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
What's made Winter Storm Uri especially fatal in Texas is not only the arrival of an unprecedented cold spell, but the way the weather event is occurring in the context of pre-existing social injustices like homelessness, as well as how it is interacting with the state's underdeveloped infrastructure, inadequate planning and regulation, and lack of emergency preparedness. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kenny Stancil Ryder. This article is published under the heading A Failed State: Power Outages Amid Freezing Weather in Texas Threaten Lives and COVID Vaccines. Stay tuned for the details, please. Much of the United States is currently engulfed in a deadly winter storm on top of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, but the negative public health effects of this convergence may be most severe in Texas, where millions of people are endangered by lack of heat amid record low temperatures and thousands of vaccine doses nearly expired in thawing freezers after the Lone Star State's isolated and underregulated electric grid was hit with widespread power outages. As journalist Emily Atkin explained recently, the jet stream bringing frigid and dangerous Arctic weather to millions of Americans is like other forms of extreme weather related to global warming. That's because, as Kevin Trenbert, a climate scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research, told Atkin several years ago, all weather events are affected by climate change because the environment in which they occur is warmer and moister than it used to be. What's made Winter Storm Uri especially fatal in Texas is not the only arrival of an unprecedented cold spell, but the way the weather event is occurring in the context of pre-existing social injustices like homelessness, as well as how it is interacting with the state's underdeveloped infrastructure, inadequate planning and regulation, and lack of emergency preparedness. Writing for Discourse Black recently, Samantha Grasso argued that occasionally something will happen in Texas to remind the people who live here that we live in a failed state. Grasso explained how freezing temperatures cascaded into power outages, causing millions to go without heat and water in the midst of a winter storm and pandemic. White people began losing power, statewide outages spiked early on Monday morning after the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, the entity that controls the power grid for almost the entire state, announced a rolling blackout, estimating outages around 40 minutes long in order to keep the grid from being overwhelmed. The ERCOT, for what it's worth, was born out of Texas' brainless reflex to buck federal regulation, but by that time, it was likely too late for a variety of reasons. 40 minutes turned into hours and then days, with no real sign of when things will get better. After the power went out, so did the water, with several cities issuing boil water notices or asking residents not to drip their faucets despite their pipes freezing or even shutting off the water. As Grasso noted, it would be an understatement to say that ERCOT was unprepared for a cold weather crisis of this scale. The rest of the lower 48 states used two electric grids, the Eastern Interconnect and the Western Interconnect. By contrast, in Texas, 90% of the state's residents rely on ERCOT. As Kate Galbraith explained a decade ago in the Texas Tribune, the Lone Star State sought independence from the national grids to avoid federal regulations. While Republican lawmakers and right-wing media figures have used the crisis in Texas as an opportunity to attack renewable energy for its alleged unreliability, the Daily Post reported recently that ERCOT attributed the blackouts to a shortage of natural gas due to a drop in pressure and frozen instruments at fossil fuel and nuclear facilities. The fact that Texas deregulated its power grid in the 1990s could also be part of the problem. The Daily Post added, the electricity market incentives are currently structured in such a way that Texas power companies receive more money if they don't weatherize all their plants and shut down some of them during cold weather. Notably, the parts of Texas that are connected to the two national grids have not been devastated by power outages. In El Paso, for instance, about 3,000 customers had power outages lasting 5 minutes or less when the winter storm moved it on Sunday, a local ABC affiliate reported. As of Monday afternoon, only 12 customers were impacted, occurring as they did in the midst of a pandemic. The widespread power outages in Texas threatened to squander thousands of doses of the vaccine, which must be kept between 13 degrees Fahrenheit and 5 degrees Fahrenheit. As the Houston Chronicle reported recently, public health officials in Harris County hustled to distribute thousands of doses after the storage facility lost power and its backup generator failed. NBC News reported recently that of the 8,430 vaccines, county health officials distributed 5,410 doses to five locations, including 3,000 to Harris County Jail, 1,000 to Houston Methodist Hospital, 810 to Rice University, and 600 to Lyndon B. Johnson Hospital and Bentop Hospital. The remaining doses were salvaged, the news outlet added. After the vaccine company advised county officials that the rest could be refrigerated and used for patients later that same day, Meanwhile, mutual aid and political action groups were scrambling to provide resources and shelter to people who were facing below freezing temperatures without robust city assistance, Grasser wrote. Those cities opened warming centers and shelters. Facilities quickly reached capacity and weren't safe to travel to in harsh weather conditions. Reflecting on COVID-19, Grasso said that Texas just like the rest of the country killed so many people because the leaders thought it's more important to prioritize short-term gains than investing people for a long-term gain. And through this mismanaged crisis, she added, it will kill others too. At least 23 people had died nationwide, the majority in Texas, as a result of Winter Storm Uri, according to New York Times.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope. Toward the peak. On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, brothers and sisters, other life forms. You are listening to Youth Station, only on IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host and friend, I hope, Zainab.
I'm actually really humble.
Lies.
I'm Mehdi. I'm also here trying to cope up with the situation. The virus, I mean.
Sure. Sure, that's what you meant. Talking about the virus thing.
Which is a global thing.
Which is a global thing. But some countries are more affected than the other.
Yeah, they are, yeah. Countries like North Korea aren't, are they?
Well...
There's something special about this country, isn't it?
The country we're
North Korea.
In. Oh.
North Korea.
Why?
Do you know if it's infected with corona or not?
No.
It shouldn't be because it doesn't allow anyone to enter.
Awesome.
And doesn't allow anyone to leave and stuff like that. Is that awesome?
Yeah, I think it's great.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I really do.
You're not allowed to leave the country. You're not allowed to visit the country. And you're not allowed to go around as a tourist, as a free person. You're constantly under surveillance.
So?
Okay.
Yeah, I've got
but
to say.
Back to the COVID thing. A lot of us have been struggling and going through a lot of hardships, even tragedies due to the COVID. Yes, I just pulled a...
Yeah, you did. Anyway, go on. Nice deal.
The question we're going to be discussing today is, how can we deal with anger or sadness or frustration or confusion or boredom that's caused by the Ronas, the COVID-19, and the state of lockdown? Now, anger could be the loss of a loved one, or an artist, or an athlete, or, you know...
Anger? Are you sure? Isn't that sadness or sorrow?
Also sadness, but on the other hand, you're like, oh, but he was so young, but he was so good, but he was so healthy, and this Ronas came and ruined everything.
I'm pretty sure that's still sorrow.
Really?
Isn't it? Because frustration is what you see in where? Netherlands? People are coming out with riots and stuff like that. Other countries also have done that, apparently.
Yeah, but why are they coming out in riots?
They're angry. That's called anger. Because they're kept down in their houses and, you know, lockdowns.
Why would they have to come out in riots? Who are they rioting against? A virus?
The people who are actually keeping them at home, not allowing them to go wherever they want, openly.
So are those people not doing it for the people's own good? Like, if it's the government that's mandating a law that y'all should stay home so you don't go out and spread the Ronas, isn't that for your own good, though?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So why riot?
It's a bit selfish, isn't it?
Okay, I understand that they're... I mean, you know, I would say if I were the people suffering from a lockdown... Mind you, lockdown happens, like, almost a year ago, right? And then...
Where?
The pandemic happened almost a year ago. Yeah. So wherever it was that I was when the pandemic first started, we went into lockdown. And 2 weeks into quarantine, I was like... What's everyone fussing about? I don't feel a change at all. This is what I always do.
Do you know what I think? If everyone actually did take care of the social distancing and all the other things that you're supposed to standard SOPs, you know, we wouldn't need such a lockdown, would we?
Really? I mean, the population of California alone is over 40 mil.
Yeah, so?
And it's a limited piece of ground. How much can they possibly socially distance themselves?
What about masks?
Okay, yeah, masks can. Yeah. If I... See...
Peas includes everything?
If people were more adamant on wearing a mask and sanitizing their hands, one would think, well, how could the virus possibly transmit and transfer, right? It would lessen. So here's the question. Are people angry and frustrated with the Ronas? Are they angry and frustrated at the government who's locking them down?
More importantly, what's the way out, yeah?
Or are they just angry and frustrated in general? I'd go with the latter.
Hmm.
And I don't think there's a solution. Because how is the government supposed to know? It's not like it's faced a pandemic before since World War II, post-World War, right? How is it supposed to know what to do in a state of global viral emergency?
Well, you could do what China did.
Which was?
Lockdown. Severe lockdowns, and they provided everyone with the necessary things that they needed. And they asked them to stay at home no matter what, and it was very effective.
A lot of other countries did that. A lot of Southeast
free
Asian
of cost,
countries do that.
Provided them with everything free of cost at their...
But, like, a really strict lockdown, like Thailand, Malaysia...
Doesn't that draw pressure on a person as an individual, you know?
To what?
For example, you're all right with the lockdown and the quarantine and everything. But someone who's a very outgoing person, who, you know, what do you call it, an extrovert? Yeah, so for those people, it's detrimental, isn't it? For their,
it really is.
Yeah, how do they deal with it? What do you think?
They don't deal with it.
How should they deal with it?
I had a friend, she was extremely outgoing. Okay, I have a very weird circle of friends because I'm not extremely outgoing at all. Anyway... And lockdown happened, and, like, fast forward a month, they slipped into depression, right? Because they couldn't function.
Was it because of what they were going through or the things that they saw around themselves going on?
No, because they couldn't function in the confinement of the walls of their home, you know? They were used to traveling and going out and doing sports and engaging with people and eating out every other night.
Where are they right now, mentally?
Where are they right now? I think they've slowly but surely coped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think religious and spirituality plays a huge role.
So they were religious?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Of course, hello. I know, it's not like me to have good, pious religious friends.
No, it's not actually normal to have a set of friends and that's it, you know? What I mean is they got over it for themselves,
right?
No, they didn't
get over it at all. They coped with it. They're still trying to figure out how to navigate their way around, you know, the state of things. And they compromise, I think, here and there. But I really believe that spirituality and religion played a huge role In grounding them, you know.
So you think that whatever goes on, for example, I'm emotionally connected to people, and I see them dying. Many people die every day. It was lower down now, but at its peak, it was thousands, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying that that's the way to deal with it, and that's the only sole way to deal with it.
Is there, by dealing with it, do you mean preventing those deaths?
No, is it even possible? No, it's not.
It's not. So dealing with, yes, I really do believe that religion is the only way to deal with it. You know, if it's taken out of context, it could be very inconsiderate. But at the end of the day, we have to believe that we're all bound for the grave. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We are from God, and to God we will return. Right? So one day it's the pandemic, one day it's a car accident, one day it's like the other day, my baby brother, he texted me and he was distraught and he was like, my friend, he was 25, he was my college friend. I found out yesterday he died of a heart attack.
25.
That's insane, yeah, right? It is, yeah. And he was raised by a single mom. Exactly. And he passed away. And just saying it now makes my heart feel weird because I'm just thinking about that mom.
Yeah.
She probably washes her son's mask every day and puts sanitizer in his backpack, you know, to make sure that. And then out of nowhere, bam, a heart attack.
Yeah, least expected.
Exactly. Yeah. 25. It's like the prime of his health and youth. Mm. Who would have thought? So my point is, we're all going to die at the end of the day, bro. But right. if we settle with that as the truest truth, like Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam has said, and if we embrace it, and if we just keep reminding ourselves, if we live life the Islamic way that tells us not to cower away from death, tells us to embrace death, tells us that it's the truest truth, tells us that it's going to find us no matter where we are, we're going to be careful in a state of pandemic, but we're still going to be like, alhamdulillah ala kulli hal. If it's my father, if it's my neighbor's father, if it's my colleague's father, if it's, you know, a stranger's father. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I sort of do.
But
isn't it natural for someone to suffer mentally, you know? It's
of course.
Yeah, so
I'm not saying someone dies and, you know, you just go sip your chai.
Right. So one point, how many Muslims do we have in the world? 1.7 billion, right? What about the people who are not Muslims, right? What do they do? There are people who are not Muslims, not religious, but they've coped well with the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
What do you think they did?
I think, again, they embraced life for more than...
So if I conclude correctly...
More than what it is, yeah.
What you're saying is by religion, you mean accepting the truth. Right.
Yeah, sure.
No, because these people are not religious at all. For example, they might be atheists for all we know.
But they're still spiritual, quote unquote.
Yeah, there's this thing that's going on recently, right? Gnostics.
And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. We're going to go off the topic if we get into it.
How are you coping with the pandemic, if coping at all?
Great.
Guys, you should see the level of sarcasm on his face. His left eye was twitching. It had a sudden nervous spasm when he said great.
It's the most beautiful thing that happened to me. Anyway.
You're a horrible liar. You have a baby, right?
Yeah.
How old is she, if I may ask?
A little younger than 2 years old.
How's she coping with the pandemic?
She has no idea what's going on.
Really? Does she not want to go out? Yes, she does.
She goes out to the yard and stuff like that, plays around, but she doesn't realize that there's a world outside the yard.
All right, makes sense.
It should be easy.
Are you going crazy?
I was gonna. I was wearing the mask and stuff like that. I was doing the things that I was usually doing, so it wasn't much of a difference. Yeah, and when it comes to lessons and stuff like that, that was the best thing that could happen, you know.
Online classes.
Yeah.
Right.
So in that sense, perfect for me.
Is your wife coping okay?
Initially, it was a bit tough for her. Definitely. But then we decided that, you know, she should just join me on the wagon and just go on, you know. So she started going out to her friends and stuff like that, wearing a mask, and, you know. So, yeah, she pretty much got used to it. I was talking about people accepting that this is the truth, is it?
Yeah, this is the truth.
Right. So as a person who does not believe in an afterlife,
yeah,
the least he could do or they could do is that they submit, right, to the truth. Being worried or being harsh on ourselves is not going to change the fact that, you know, we are headed towards that very thing that we're sad about.
Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of Youth Station. Until another greeting, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you. Justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
While there have been drops in life expectancy in the U.S. in recent years due to increases in drug overdoses, the decline over the past year, in large part due to the coronavirus pandemic, is the biggest drop in life expectancy since the Second World War. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Chris Walker, news writer. This article is published under the heading COVID deaths in the U.S. lead to biggest drop in life expectancy since the Second World War. Here's the details. Life expectancy in the United States of America has dropped by a full year, according to new figures released recently. The current life expectancy of an individual in the U.S. is now 77.8 years, down from 78.8 years in 2019. While there have been drops in life expectancy in the U.S. in recent years due to increases in drug overdoses, the decline over the past year, in large part due to the coronavirus pandemic, is the biggest drop in life expectancy since the Second World War. The drop in life expectancy was even more noticeable among communities which have been hit harder by the pandemic. Black Americans, for example, saw a drop of 2.7 years, while Latino Americans saw a decrease of 1.9 years. The gap between life expectancies seen in white and black Americans is now the widest it's been in more than two decades, with white Americans born today expected to live 6 years longer than black Americans on average. The actual drop in overall life expectancy may be more pronounced, as the figures are based on the first 6 months of last year, and the majority of deaths from coronavirus pandemic in 2020 occurred in the second half of that year. There is some hope that the situation can turn around as the rate of new COVID-19 cases continues to decrease. In the past 2 weeks, for example, the number of new cases have dropped by 43%. The daily death toll has dropped by 34%. The 7-day average of new daily deaths is 2,026 deaths being reported per day, the lowest since New Year's Eve. Much of the COVID-19 related deaths that occurred in 2020 could have been prevented, according to a new report published in The Lancet. Within the research cited in that report, which states that the United States of America could have avoided 40% of COVID-19 deaths, two factors largely stand out: the country's for-profit healthcare system and the actions of former President Donald Trump during the pandemic. U.S. life expectancy began falling behind that of other wealthy nations in 1980s, the Lancet report noted, when the Reagan administration enacted regressive policies in healthcare. That is the turning point where health started falling in the United States compared to other G7 nations. Kevin Grombach, a professor of family and community medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and co-author of the Lancet report, said in an interview recently, "We totally shifted to conservative and neoliberal policies, and that corresponds with the deteriorating health in the country relative to other nations," he added. Over the past 40 years, life expectancy in the U.S. has fallen behind other wealthy nations by an average of 3.4 years. The Trump administration also bears major responsibility for the high number of COVID-19 deaths in the U.S., the reporter stated, as it continued to peddle detrimental approaches to public health issues. Trump's inconsistent messaging and amplification of misinformation led many, particularly those in his devoted fan base, to take the virus less seriously than they should have. Trump's refusal to lead by example and wear a mask in most public appearances, as well as his promotion of lies about COVID-19, including not leveling with American people about its true deadlines, likely contributed to higher rates of deaths. The lack of mask wearing and social distancing practices within the former president's own campaign rallies probably led to hundreds of coronavirus-related deaths. As of Thursday morning, 490,326 Americans have died from coronavirus, with nearly 28 million diagnosed with the virus so far. While health models predict many more deaths, at least 115,000 casualties from the pandemic can be avoided between now and June 1st if everyone in the U.S. wore masks in public.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a televised speech delivered on January 8, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the anniversary of an uprising led by the people of the city of Qom on January 9, 1978.
In fact, the 19th of Day uprising could be considered as the first Ibrahimi axe blow on the body of the great idol. It was the first axe blow dealt to the great idol called the US by the people of Qom, and more blows were dealt with it later on. Today, you can see in what conditions the US is. Today, you can see the miserable state of the great idol, such as the democracy, such as their electoral debacle, and such as their human rights. On the basis of their human rights, every few hours, or at least every few days, an African-American is murdered on the street without any reason and without having committed any crime, while the murderer is not pursued in any way. Such is the state of their values. They keep speaking about American values, but today they are being ridiculed by the whole world. Even their friends ridicule them. And such is their economy. The US economy is crippled in the true sense of the word. There are tens of millions of unemployed, hungry, and homeless individuals. Such is the condition of the US in present time. This is, of course, an important point.
Your light and love, all I see. Nothing more I'd ever wanna need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith. To be stronger than the good.
Good and anyone in Rabi, Sayyidul Akwani, Huwal Mannan. Ali Rabbun Azeemun, Laysa Li Rabbun Siwa, Huwal Rahman.
But a more surprising point is that some people still point to the US as their Qibla. They continue to pin their hopes and dreams on the US. A US which is in such a condition. Well, we said that the public uprising of the people was anti-American. But the reason was not only that the US president had given his 100% support to the regime. That only served as a release of the people's displeasure and inner rage. Otherwise, it had been 25 years then that the US had exerted all kinds of pressure on the people. With the help of the dictatorial and the corrupt Pahlavi regime, it had turned Iran into its main base, and the result was by no means progress for our country. On the contrary, the result of the US's presence in our country was economic and scientific poverty, corruption, and cultural decadence.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah.
To Allah.
Gazette reporters.
Israeli forces opened the gates of its rainwater stores east of Gaza, allowing rainwater to flood large swaths of Palestinian land. The Palestinian Ministry of Agriculture said in a statement that the water drowned thousands of meters of agricultural lands and damaged wheat and other winter crops. This led to great financial losses for farmers.
Every year in this time, Israeli army opens the rainwater gates to flood our lands and destroy the crops. Israel also sprays harmful herbicides at our land, damaging all the farms and crops planted. These attempts aim at forcing us to leave this land. We stress that these attempts won't make us leave. We will remain here.
In violation of international standards, Israeli army also shoot at Palestinian farmers to push them off their lands and spray herbicides beside the buffer zone along the Gaza Strip, something directly affects the livelihood of Palestinians.
This is the second time in a month the Israeli army has opened its water gates and flooded our agricultural lands. All the winter crops are now destroyed here. This means a great financial loss for the farmers and even consumers. Our life as a farmer is under risk of being shot by Israeli army.
The Ministry of Agriculture says the move hampers transference of Gaza's main source of fruits and vegetables.
Over thousands of meters of our lands have been destroyed this time. Opening rainwater gates is a move by Israeli army to force us to leave our lands and damage the main food supply for Gaza. Drowning these crops will not only damage the planted crops, but also the lands.
Palestinians here say the living conditions have been deteriorating due to the Israeli blockade. They say Israel is now making the bad situation worse by damaging their agricultural lands and causing them financial losses. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
In the Rohingya refugee camp in the outskirts of New Delhi, there is an utter panic and the residents are fearful even going out to buy the essentials. They say many are chased, intimidated, and usually police and other agencies visit their camps to monitor their movements. Ali Johar, a young Rohingya refugee, says several have been arrested in the recent months and put into jails for illegally entering India, saying the whole community is in utter despair.
Around 60 people have been arrested in the different parts of India, including West Bengal, Manipur, Assam, Haryana, and Delhi. In Delhi, around 8 people were detained. In Haryana, several families were harassed to leave out from Haryana.
Fearful of possible arrest and expulsion, scores of refugees have gone into hiding across the Indian subcontinent, while others have entered Bangladesh amid a mounting hate campaign against the community in India. The destitute community, who has escaped what the United Nations described genocide, is struggling for existence amid international silence about their plight. An estimated 40,000 are living in India. The community has faced a brutal crackdown by the army in their country, such as rape, murder, child killings, arbitrary arrests, forced disappearances, as well as destruction of the entire Rohingya villages. Now many fear that the military coup might make the situation even worse. Some reports suggest hundreds of Rohingya are being held in Indian jails on charges of illegal entry and have no proper judicial support. Their men are unable to find work due to lack of identity cards and threats of intimidation by law enforcement agencies, forcing men to stay at their camps.
We have been living here peacefully since 2012. We came to save our lives.